cliffcentral.com.
Grant, I need to make a critical business decision. We've been expanding rapidly, and my gut feel tells me that we should be investing for growth. But I need to put some financial science behind that gut feel of mine.
Don't you have a financial manager or director that can help you with that?
But isn't that rather expensive?
It doesn't have to be. Why don't you contact the finance team? They're a consultancy that can provide you with a part-time financial manager or director at a fraction of the cost of a full-time resource.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Masterclass. I'm Safia from New Habits, and I'm helping you to make shift happen. Today, I'm standing in for Richard Angus, who's off to meet with clients in Cameroon, and I'm incredibly jealous, I must add. And so it's just me flying solo today. In the first half hour, we have the business skills conversation, which is brought to you in association with the USB Ed. Last week, we spoke with Mike Gee on aligning business unit strategies. And today, we're speaking about product development in business. And in many ways, that's an extension of the conversation we had last week with Mike. And joining us via Skype today is USB Ed facilitator Sean Cunningham. And Sean, I'm going to have to clarify whether I have to address him as Dr. Sean because he has an enormous CV. He's a change consultant working across multiple fields of competitiveness, improvement within economies, industries, and companies. In the average year, Sean works across the world between 12 and 15 countries. So Sean is who I want to be when I'm big one day. Welcome, Sean.
Hello, Sophia.
How are you doing?
I've got a little bit of a cold, so I hope I'm not sounding too husky.
Yeah, I think we should warn the listeners that we are either going to sound very sexy, both of us, or very drowsy.
Yes, parents, you can keep your children in the car.
So, Sean, before we get going with today's theme on product development, maybe you can tell us a bit about what it is that you do and how you help businesses to manage their competitiveness, especially given that you don't only work with business, you work with countries.
Yes, well, it sounds very glamorous, but in the end, I often work with industries. Yeah. Which could be whole collectives or in regions, let's say a region of a country, to help economies become more innovative. So I often work with universities, industry leaders, small enterprises, government officials to try and figure out what is really going on and what can be done to make a industry perform better.
Okay.
So like you, I'm a coach, but my clients are very often universities, industry bodies or governments.
Okay. So I imagine that we do very similar work, except that the scale at which you do it at is enormous.
Well, I would guess we use the same principles.
Okay.
And in my work, I have the benefit of moving between different parts of an economy. So in South Africa, for instance, I've worked a lot in electronics, which is very modern, and pharmaceutics, which is also very modern,
mm-hmm.
and then working with the metal sector and the foundry sector, where there are parts of that industry which is very traditional. So I get to move between these different industries, and I can tell you that very often the constraints are very, very similar, and the principles are very similar, but perhaps the speed of change and the consequence of change is different.
Okay. So everything you're going to share with us today is applicable to businesses regardless of where they are in the economy.
Yes. I'll try and make it clear where it is, but where it isn't. But I work mainly with small enterprises.
Okay.
So today's conversation would be about leadership in small enterprises. And maybe to make it clear, I'm also not thinking only of the entrepreneur, but all the technical staff involved.
Okay. Awesome. So we're talking about product development today, and Sean, we had an earlier conversation and I explained to you that for me, product development has always been a messy process, whether you're in a large organization or in a small business. And it's messy because it's not only about something that you put on the shelves or service you offer to the clients. It's about fundamentally who you are in the organization. Can you tell us a bit about what product development is and how it happens in the organization?
So if we look at small enterprises, product development is something that a lot of people associate with the start of small enterprises. I'm not going to focus at that. I'm going to focus on businesses that are up and running and that want to now change or improve a product.
Mm-hmm.
And in those kind of businesses, product development is very often not the start of the process. There's something else that happens. Either they get customer feedback, or they get a bright idea about something, or maybe new equipment that they've bought allows them to do more.
Mm-hmm.
So product development is very often not the start of process. I know that in entrepreneurship, it's often taught that this is the start of the process. But in reality, a lot of companies are actually, a lot of small companies are often very, what would the word be, complacent about product development.
So I'm almost hearing you say that you're going to start at a point where the business is established, but it's responding to what's happening inside the business and with its customers and the environment it's in.
Yes, yes. Because what we see with startups is very often the idea was hatched before the startup.
Yeah.
You know, so somebody got an idea while doing something, and actually the idea is thought through very differently the first time. And in established businesses, established small businesses, product development is often not given enough emphasis and importance.
Okay.
So in product development, and look, there are many ways to structure this. So I'm just going to lay it out in layman's language.
Awesome.
There are three or four things that need to happen. There's some form of idea generation that needs to take place, where leaders have to figure out where do we want to improve, where can we possibly improve. So this, I will just broadly call that idea generation for mm-hmm. improvement. Then you will gather some ideas and you have to figure out where to dig deeper. And I call this your concept flesh out. This is where you take a piece of paper and you say, this is how we could possibly design a new product, or this is what a new service offering could look like.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be the features. And, you know, the technical people, they really love this activity of fleshing it out. And you can take that concept and go and discuss it with family, with friends, with clients, maybe with equipment suppliers, to just check, are you completely, you know, off track? So there's the concept flesh out. And I make that a distinct step from the design activity,
okay,
where you really go into the nuts and bolts, where you start, maybe you start with computer-aided design software, or maybe you start with a technical drawing, and where you have to make choices between materials, where you have to make choices between size and performance and so on. So the design is typically a very, you know, it's more technical, and it's also where a lot of decisions get made between alternatives. A step that is increasingly important now is a prototyping step, where because of the massively dropping cost of prototyping, you can prototype your circuit or you can prototype your product in its entirety. And it doesn't have to be accurate. I often help companies with boxes and toilet rolls and wire to make a mock-up of a product so that you can see what this thing would look like, which then allows you to go and refine your design ideas. And then there's a final step, which a lot of non-technical businesses miss. And that is the step where you have to document your process, the specifications that your product should adhere to, the how users can use the product and so on.
Mm-hmm.
The documentation step is also very often overlooked by many small enterprises. You know, that's your set of instructions of how this product should be maintained, should be made, what it should comply with, and so on.
Okay, so Sean, so those things don't sound like rocket science, and yet when we get busy in our businesses, we very often overlook these steps because we get caught up in the day-to-day running of the business.
Yes, I think you mentioned just now that it's messy, and I think it's messy because it's to a large degree natural.
Yeah.
We don't always think about this, and for me there's a very clear distinction between the companies that have a very thoughtful approach to product development versus the companies that develop products every now and then in a very unpredictable manner.
And what is the difference?
The companies that are thoughtful about product development is constantly busy searching for new ideas. Actually, not searching. Searching is not strong enough. They are generating new ideas in their industry, and they're even searching beyond their industry. And they are engaging with equipment suppliers to figure out what is possible next. You know, where are you guys heading off to? They're speaking to clients to find out how their clients' businesses are changing. So companies that are thoughtful about product development is in a way connected and wired very differently to companies that occasionally develop or modify a product.
Yeah. You're making me think of 3M as an example.
Yes, but it's unfair because 3M was a company that was in the business of innovation. You know, so you do have some industries, for instance, in the, in some industries, in some, like in the software, gaming and animation industry, there's a constant process of development. So, you know, ongoing product development is part of the game there. And you find that in many industries, like in plastics, there's so many rapid changes. There are so many changes happening simultaneously that businesses there tend to be a little bit more product development oriented. Electronics is also maybe like that, but in, for instance, in the mechanical and the metal sector, it's very often the bigger companies that are innovating, and the smaller companies are very often caught by surprise by changes.
So in these companies that are more thoughtful around product development and idea generation, who are the people that, when you're working with companies and industries, who are the people that come up with these ideas that take the company forward and compete at the next level?
So it's usually not only the CEOs. I must say not only, because in many of the more technical companies, very often the founders are technical people with a, that stays involved in product development. But for me, there's a very important test, and that is, how involved is the rest of the organization in product development or product improvement? And there are many academic research titles and journals that's been done on the challenges to get marketing and product development to work together, or to get engineering and manufacturing to work together. For me, there's another level to this, and that is how the different levels within an organization is involved. I'm always astounded how companies do not engage with frontline staff to get direct feedback from clients on product usability and product features. I'm often amazed that something that makes South Africa a unique country is we have many, many sophisticated clients. It's just amazing when you move out of South Africa and you go to many other developing countries. You do not have the kind of banks or the kind of defense contractors or automotive or chemical manufacturers there that you have here. But I'm always amazed that so few small enterprises actually reach out to these companies. So for me, it's always amazing when you speak to a multinational and you say, where do you find your small suppliers? And they say, we have to go and search for them. Yeah. And it's like, really? Nobody's contacted you? And it's like, yes, the people that are selling soap and cleaning materials contact us all the time, but not manufacturers.
Yeah.
So in those kind of enterprises, it's a long story now, but in healthy enterprises, it's not only management and top management that's involved in idea generation and product development. There's a much better engagement with staff, with suppliers, and with clients, and even clients, sophisticated buyers that are not yet clients, around possible improvements.
Okay. So you're talking about a kind of work environment where development happens through collaboration.
Where it happens through collaboration and where it's an ongoing process.
Okay, so it's not a special occasion that happens once in a while.
No, it could be interrupted by special occasions, but it should be. And maybe the intensity is not always the same, but you should constantly be on the lookout for change in the external environment, change in the technology environment, new possibilities within your business because you get better at something. You know, so maybe I can give an example of a company that manufactured a product that mainly used, it's a cleaning product, a machine that is used in an industrial setup.
Yeah.
And their main technical background that they used to design this machine was an understanding of fluids and water, chemicals, and then, you know, how to work with pumps and so on, mechanics. And at some point they started, they had an electronic circuit designed to control this interface. And at some point they employed a graduate that could actually write code for this little electronic interface. And after a while they realized this actually gives them a complete new competence. They could do far better process control, process monitoring, and process integration. So it allowed them to completely rethink their product based on these new capabilities that they had developed quite by accident inside the firm.
Okay. So that tells me that the business must be alert to rapid change in the organization, even changes it didn't expect, and to be able to respond to those changes as they come through.
Yes, and you have to, and you can't ask people what has changed. You need to find all kinds of interesting ways to try and elicit a response from people, especially since your staff also don't really want to see change that's potentially uncomfortable.
So one of the other things that you also have on your CV is that you do change work with your clients. How do you support your clients to set up environments that allow those awarenesses or those opportunities to come through in a way that makes the company competitive? Because it's one thing to have the ideas. It's another thing to make those ideas come to life and flourish.
Wow. Okay, that's a big question.
I know. You're the doctor in the room.
So I like to use the concept of joint sense making.
Yes.
Which is about, in a way, tapping into the awareness that should exist in organizations. Now, in a lot of the smaller businesses that I get involved with, even when they are leading and high-performing companies, you often find that management functions are disconnected and that the organization is not sharing a perspective on what is happening in the external environment. So that's typically where I start.
Mm-hmm.
And to do this, you need to recognize diversity, which means that the financial administrator that typically drives engineering nuts should be seen as a strength, contributing to the system and not being a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this joint sense making often starts with a conversation where we change the normal weekly agenda to make sure that we tap into these specialized and diverse views from across the organization around what is changing and what the potential impact could be on our business and how we would know whether this thing that now just looks like it could or could not happen, you know, so it's on the horizon, but we're not sure if it's going to actually manifest.
Yeah.
We have to then develop strategies to say, well, if this happens, if this materializes, then we would have to design our products in a different way. And if that happens, then we might have to change the way we partner with a key equipment supplier or with a key distribution partner. So it's about conversation. And I find that very often agendas that management use in companies have become so stale that no real in-depth discussion is available. I get very disheartened when I hear that businesses develop a strategy once a year and then they run. For me, I feel totally overwhelmed when I hear that companies are having a five-year strategy that they develop once a year.
Okay.
Instead of having this ongoing strategic conversation about the environment and how this affects our product, our business model, our competencies inside the company, you know, maybe on a reflection, companies very quickly realize that we actually have so many people that come from the same background, the same academic discipline, maybe the same demographic pool, that it actually weakens our ability to make sense of what other people are doing or what how changes could affect our business.
Okay. So, Sean, if you were speaking to me as a small business owner or a medium-sized business owner, what is the advice you would give to me about how to set up my time with my team so that I am able to elicit the potential for product development on an ongoing basis rather than a strategic breakaway every now and then?
So I'm going to give two different answers.
Okay.
The one answer is make sure that you have regular meetings with the expert units in your business where you can elicit their perspectives and their opinion. They don't have to give you facts. They just have to tell you, listen, I'm worried about this because I think it's going to influence my our business in this and that way. So to create spaces where the agenda is not too too structured, where people can actually talk about these things.
Okay.
Then the other piece of advice is there's a brilliant article that is widely available on the internet by Robert Sutton, and he writes about building an innovation factory. And he gives four good steps that I would advise your listeners to look into for you now in your instance.
Yeah.
The first one is you have to create ways of capturing good ideas from anybody that's willing to share it with you and even those that are not willing to share it. So you have to constantly build lists and lists of ideas that can be improved on. And the second thing that you have to do is old ideas. You have to keep them alive. You have to try and take ideas that we tried 5 years ago and say maybe we should dust some of those things off and try it again now because maybe the context has changed.
Yeah,
maybe
technology.
We are now more – yes, technology has changed. Or maybe
markets.
We are more experienced now.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, keep those old ideas alive and see how you can combine some of the new ideas with some of the old ideas. The third thing that Sutton says is try to find – new imaginative users for old ideas. So this is about saying, okay, so a few years ago we thought of changing the product in that way, but what if we actually gave the thing wheels and made this whole thing mobile?
Mm-hmm.
So completely rethinking things that you've mastered in the past or things that you've rethought in the past with some of the shifts that are happening in the environment now. And the last point that I think is very important is in product development, you want to actually experiment with different ideas. So what I often advise businesses to do is maybe divide your staff into two or three groups and let them flesh out the idea or play with a concept in separate groups and let them compete about the features and some of the core dimensions of these ideas, you know, so that you create a little bit of internal competition to develop ideas in parallel and then maybe bringing these streams back together so that you can not just develop one option, but maybe even two options.
So product development is obviously a broader part of leading your business. And what you're talking about here is a lot of experimentation. How do business leaders go about creating the space in which their staff are willing to participate in an ongoing basis with experimentation, given that you said earlier on that people generally don't like change?
Yes. Okay. So I think I've spoken to Richard about this topic on a few occasions. And the one challenge we have in South Africa is that we don't actually like failing all that much. So you have to really create an environment where people can try small things, make small changes, where the risks for failure or embarrassment are contained. And the other thing that I would just say on this point is that people are willing to experiment and take risks when they know that there's a whole bunch of other experiments happening at the same time. That's why we all go to gym. You know, so you can look over to the gym bike on the side and see that guy's not making much progress.
Yeah.
But he shows up every day.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm just joking.
That's
so
me.
So in product development and in innovation in general, finding ways to get your people to say, okay, Friday afternoons, let's try something. And to know that there are three or four other people also trying something new makes it a little bit less daunting to try something.
So it's not about creating specific meetings or occasions. This is about the culture of the organization and learning to play in the business.
It's about the culture. And yes, yes. Look, you get businesses that have only one major product. And obviously in a business with only one product, the product development process looks very different. But on average, our small businesses often have a whole bunch of complementary products because our products don't always operate in isolation. And because mm-hmm. small businesses are often so able to customize products to really meet the requirements of clients. So by its very nature, small businesses are often slightly less specialized than larger enterprises. And small enterprises have to have a complementary portfolio of products. So for me, in a small business, ongoing product development is critical to also make sure that you can survive change in the economy, changes in the system.
So, Sean, we're coming to the end of the show. We've got about a minute and a half left. You did mention earlier on that it's becoming increasingly important to do prototypes. What leads you to the conclusion that it's so important to do this?
So what I've often seen with prototypes is that, firstly, the thing comes out very differently in a prototype form than it looked on a computer screen. So that's one important reason. The second thing is that you could actually observe people trying to use your prototype. You can see how they try to open it or operate it. But the other thing about prototypes that is maybe important is you can prototype things at a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. So with 3D printing or with even rapid electronics design and so on, you can create a replica of your product, a smaller version that shows people how this thing will work. And it makes it easier for customers to plan how this technology might work in their business and so on. So for me, prototyping, whether you are using boxes, clay and wire, or whether you are using 3D printing and rapid electronics development, prototyping is an essential step, because I think I also mentioned to you earlier that a computer-aided design is very patient.
Yes.
It allows for a lot of features, actually sometimes too many features. And it's when you create prototypes that you figure out what are the critical design features and how will users respond to your product.
Yeah. So if I've heard anything from this bit of information you shared with us, it's two critical elements. The one is to learn to just have really, really powerful conversations in your business on an ongoing basis at all levels of the organization. And the other is that I've heard you say that we have to start playing in the organization and creating the space for having creative conversations and the space to fail on a regular basis so that we can succeed and
yes.
grow.
You've summed it up perfectly, yes.
Okay, so Sean, as we wrap up, is there anything that you want to do to share with us as a parting shot so that we remember you for all eternity?
Wow.
No pressure.
I think that in South Africa, we really have to focus also on embracing diversity. In our workplace.
Yeah.
And to make sure that when you talk about product improvements or any improvements in your business, make sure that not everybody looks and sounds the same as you.
Yeah.
So really to tap into the amazing diversity that we have in South Africa, both in terms of employees, but also users and consumers and observers. So that would be my takeaway. We have such an amazing diversity in one country.
Yeah, we do.
And we don't tap into this often enough when we develop new products or try to improve how our businesses are structured or run.
Awesome. Sean, thank you so very much, and I hope to speak to you again sometime.
Okay, Sophia. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up is our business conversation. Stay with us. CliffCentral.com.